Good day. My name is Roger Hertz. We're in Seattle, Washington. It's March 26, 1991, and we're speaking today with John Nenezich, who began his umpiring career in 1940. John?
Yeah, 1940, a fabulous salary, $90 a month. Pay for your own food, your own equipment, your own hotel.
Which league was it?
That was the Western International League, and some of the teams that were in there were Yakima, Wenatchee, Spokane, Salem, Oregon, Tacoma, Victoria, B.C., and Vancouver, B.C. Depression days. Everybody was eating raw meat.
And how long did you stay in that league?
I stayed in that league 9 years, and I got drafted to the Southern Association. And the Southern Association was a double-A league, and I was in an A league. And they offered me less money than I was getting in an A-League, so I get the hell out of there. Then I was bought by the Coast League, providing I would report, and I reported in Oakland.
And what year was that?
Yeah, that was 1951.
And salary?
Salary, $1,500 a month. It was $1,200 a month, and then we got $300 a month for expenses. They kind of paid us under the table a little bit. And we started, instead of being in a bus league, we did fly. And my first year in the Coast League, I reported in Oakland with Bill Ed Runge and Bill Englund. And everything was fine until Sunday. I got a close play at first base. And in the ninth inning with a score, Frisco was leading Oakland 3-2. And close play went against Oakland, and they didn't like it. And pretty soon somebody threw a cushion, and I thought a cushion factory exploded. And all of a sudden my partner, Runge, hollered, "Look out," and I look around, and here's a big woman. She must have weighed 180, 200 pounds, full of VO or Lucky Lager or something. And she's after me. If she'd have caught me, she'd have killed me.
Who was some of the... Oh, I'm sorry.
Anyway, some of the... It took three policemen to get her off the field, and Lefty O'Dill he had a ball where he almost had him sold for $65,000, which was a lot of money. And he said, "Well," I said, "Mr. O'Dill," I said, "let's finish this ball game. You only got one more out with all the cushions on the field." He said, "We can't pick him up." And I said, "Well, God, this is my first year, my first week in the Coast League, and I got a forfeited ball game." And he says, "I'll go along with you, Pollock." "Well, I'm not a Pollock, I'm a Slab." Anyway, we finished the ball game, and it took me, about 2 hours to get out of the park because the fans were going crazy. And that was all Mal Ott's fault, because as soon as he came over to open his big mouth, well, the fans went crazy. Yeah, that was my introduction into the Coast League.
Who were some of the players that you...
Oh, let's see. Mal Ott was managing Oakland at the time, and he had guys like Spider Jorgensen, Augie Gallon, Eddie Sauer, Lloyd Christopher, Wally Westlake. Oh, he had a mess of big leaguers that just came down. And they were all kind of eating raw meat, I think. Those were some of the Oakland ball players.
Did you have any favorite ball players at that time?
Yeah, Jack Salveson, he'd never squawked at an umpire. He was a pitcher for San Diego. Bill Lawrence with Seattle, never hollered at an umpire. Bobby Belsina, a little outfielder. There was about five ball players on your one hand that wouldn't give you any trouble, but you couldn't trust the rest of them. The way I broke in the Coast League, we had a umpire in chief. His name was Jack Powell, a big, tough Irishman. And he said, "Any time that you see a guy with a baseball suit on, you don't trust him." And I got to find out that was about the truth. Because they want to go up, and some of them are down, and they want to stick around, and so they're hungry. They don't They're looking for everything for an edge, and they think, well, they can bully you around. They might get the close ones. There's nothing. They're either safe or they're out, or it's a ball or a strike. So we had nothing to give them and nothing to take away from them. That's the way it was in baseball as an umpire.
Were there certain players that you remembered that gave you a particularly tough time?
Yeah, there was a few. Carlos Bernier was one. He was the property of Pittsburgh, playing for Hollywood Stars in the Coast League. He used to try to steal bases all the time, and I remember once that he was thrown out twice trying to steal second base, and he went crazy. He said, no, I've never been thrown out twice trying to steal a base in my life. He's talking broken. I could hardly understand him. And I think he was cussing me a little bit, but I didn't know what the hell he was saying. He was a hot dog. Paul Richards, a manager, you couldn't talk to him unless he cursed. He had to curse all the time. Then there was a catcher by the name of Jim Glad, a big Indian. And he didn't go to spring training. That he had contact trouble. He didn't go to spring training with Portland. And big, 6'4", 6'5". Always grumbled. And one night I give him the heave-ho down in Portland. This is the Vaughan Street Park. And I'm just about ready to kick him out. Well, before I kicked him out, Bill Sweeney was the manager. And about the sixth inning, he takes off his mask and his protector. And he got one shin guard off. And here comes Sweeney. What's the matter, Jim? He said, well, what I was going to tell this so-and-so. I didn't want to use a cuss word here. I better not. He says, what I was going to tell this slob, he said, I was going to get kicked out anyway. I might as well save a few bucks, so I'll get the hell out of here. And Sweeney, the manager, he says, well, he said, now remember, he's not talking to you. I said, that's right, he's not talking to me. And he was really hot. That was kind of an embarrassing situation for me. I didn't know what the hell to do.
Probably the worst somebody ever called you was incompetent, however.
Oh, yeah, I had a close play in L.A., L.A. Angels and the Hollywood Stars. They always were bitter rivals. Gene Mock, second baseman for L.A. Gene Mock was quite a manager later. Well, a couple of close plays, and he didn't like this one play. And he never cursed, but this was worse than cursing. He says, I know the word for you, you're incompetent. So I give him the heave-ho, and he says, geez, I didn't curse you. If he'd have said I was horse manure, that would have been all right. But incompetent, he had to go. And they took pictures of it, and he looks like he was crying. And he came in one summer, and he looked at that picture. He says, I'm not crying there. I said, the hell you're not. You were crying. You were quite a crybaby anyway. And he says, I ought to sue you. But he's a great guy and a great manager. He just had a lot of bad luck. That was Gene.
Are there any managers that you remember for their managing ability?
Yeah. Yeah, Roger Hornsby, I thought, was one of the finest managers I ever met in baseball. And any time, I remember a couple of close plays I had, and I'd get in an argument with the ball players, and I remember one in particular in Seattle. The hell was the second baseman's name? Gosh, I can't think of his name. Anyway, he's giving me a little lip, And here comes Roger. He said, you get back to second base. And he says, John, he says, how come you called the guy safe? I said, Roger, I called him safe because he was safe. He says, hey, that's a good answer. Let's go. That was Roger Hornsby. Another incident down in San Diego. Ed Runge kicked out a couple of guys that... They got out of line a little bit, and not a little bit, quite a bit. So let's see, the hell was the manager's name? Anyway, who was the manager? Now I can't think of his name. Del Baker. Del Baker was the manager. And so at the plate the next night, we're getting the lineups, and Baker's talking to Hornsby. He says, you know, Roger, up on the big show, he says, They boot him up there, and he says, we give him a little lip, and what happens? He said, we don't get kicked out down here. We open our mouth, and we get the heave-ho. And Roger says to Del, he says, you know, Del, I've been in this game as long as you. I think a little longer. Yeah, a little longer, he said. Umpires have never beat my ball clubs. That was Roger Hornsby. So Dell, he didn't know what the hell to say. And Ned Runge was a good umpire. He retired from the bigs. Bill England went to the bigs. He stayed there for a couple of years, got ulcers, and got the hell out of there. But most of those guys that I worked with in the bigs, they're all dead now. They're all in the cemetery. Palakoudis is dead. Ashford's dead. Runge can't walk. Merle Anthony is a cripple. And then he went to the nut house, somebody told me. They're all in pretty bad shape, and I'm still working, so I think that's pretty good. So, like Runge and I, Runge came up for a big banquet, a guest speaker. He said, "Boy, you're lucky." He says, "You still got your wheels." He says, "Everybody in our profession has got the bad wheels." And now he's got a son umpiring in the National League and doing a great job.
The Ashford you mentioned, was that Emmett Ashford?
Emmett Ashford, yeah. He was the first black umpire in baseball. And I hate to say this, but Jesus, a couple of times I'm lucky to be alive working with him. We had a big ride down in Portland. We had one in San Francisco opening week. And Bill Sweeney got so mad at him that Bill had ulcers. He was supposed to... Bill wasn't supposed to take a drink, but he got so mad at Ash that after the ball game in Seattle, after San Francisco-Portland series, he got so mad he got drunk that night and died the next day. So everybody accuses Ashford of killing him. You know, but Ash, he was a pretty good fella.
Good umpire?
He was all right. He was an umpire. No, he was. He was the first black umpire. They had to take a black umpire. I didn't think he was a good umpire. Of course, a lot of people didn't think I was a good umpire. Nobody thinks you can pick 10 managers and they'll give you 10 different umpires that were good and bad. And if you had a little trouble with them, they'd say, "Oh, he was lousy," even if he was great. Runge, when he went to the bigs, he went to spring training with the Yankees. And he called Mickey Mantle out on strikes a couple of times. And Mickey says, "Yeah," he says, "Hey, Buescher," he says, "you'll be back in the Coast League. You ain't going to make it up here." Well, he says, "You're not going to stop me from making it up here." So he says, "You wait and see." Well, sure enough, he tried to get Runge out of there. So during the season, Runge ran him twice. He's the only guy to run Mickey Mantle out of a ball game. He says, "They pay to see me come out here, not to see you." That's just the way he's talking to Runge. This is what Runge told me. Yeah, people are funny. Ball players are. Powell might have been right. He said, "Don't trust them when they got that ball suit on." Big Steve Bilko. Remember Big Steve? Mm-hmm. Played first base for
Pittsburgh.
No, he played for the Cubs and he played for L.A. And he looked great in the Coast League. He hit pretty good. And the worst thing he ever said to a guy, he was big enough to beat Bears with a switch. But he was the type of a guy that never got mad at an umpire. He said, "Well, you guys give me a headache once in a while." That's the only thing that he ever said nasty. And when the season was over, you'd think a big guy like that would be a log or something. He was selling cosmetics. Poor guy died here about 5 years ago, Big Steve Bilko.
Was Bilko one of the better players you've seen?
No, he wasn't. No, he was a good hitter, long ball hitter. He was not a good first baseman, not a better. No, I've seen many better ball players than Steve, but he was a good guy, and he was he helped the club because he hit the long ball at Wrigley Field in L.A.
Who was the best ball player you've seen?
Oh, gee, I've seen a few good ones. Let's see. Jim Rivera had a great year with Seattle. Bill Lawrence was the greatest fielding outfielder I ever saw. The best hitter I ever saw was a guy named Smead Jolly. Played with the bigs, but he was a lousy fielder. I saw Smead make 3 errors on one play, playing the outfield. He's playing for Spokane, and they're playing up in Vancouver. Short right field in Vancouver, big tall fence. Bud Sheely hits a ball to the right fielder, and Bud can't run very good either. And Jolly goes to field the ball. It went through his legs, error number one. He goes to play the ball off the fence, goes through his legs again, error number two. Now Sheely is rounding second, going into third. He picks up the ball, he throws it out of the park. This was Meat Jolly. But what a hitter. This guy, I think he holds every record in the Western International League. And Smead, when he went into baseball, he was playing with Frisco. He, Earl Averill, and I think Bob Johnson, and all three of them were sold at once to the Bigs, San Francisco, with this way back in the 20s. But Smead was the greatest hitter of all time, my opinion.
Including the Pacific Coast League?
Well, I don't think he played in there too long.
No, the ones that you saw in the Pacific Coast League.
The guys that I saw in the Coast League that were great hitters, let's see, who the hell were they? Well, Augie Galland hit pretty good. Jim Rivera was tough to get out. Way back, before I was umpiring in the Coast League, I remember a guy by the name of Brick Eldred. He was an outfielder. He had a hell of a time throwing the ball to, he was a right fielder, had a hell of a time throwing the ball to the second baseman. But he was a hell of a hitter. And then Seattle had a guy by the name of Bill Cunningham way back. Ball players that were good hitters. Joe DiMaggio was a pretty good hitter in the Coast League, and he went up. The story that I heard from the owner, Charlie Graham, of the Frisco Ball Club, that he sold Joe to the Yankees for $25,000 because he had a bad wheel and they wouldn't pay him over $25,000. And he sold his kid brother Dominic for $65,000 because Dominic could run and he had good wheels. They sold, I think, Dominic to the Red Sox. $65,000. Can you imagine getting more than twice as much for Dominic as they did Joe? Well, that's the way it was. Of course, $25,000 in the 30s was a ton of dough. And Charlie Graham, San Francisco, all those guys were hanging on, you know. The guys that, well, Emil Sickens, when he came to Seattle, Colonel Rupert, that owned the New York Yankees at that time, Rupert's Brewing Company, he's Canadian, and he, Emil Sickens from Canada, and he told Emil, he says, geez, go out there, and he says, buy the ball club, he said, in the Coast League, he says, that's the greatest advertising you get for your brewery. So he come out and he built the stadium, and he thought it'd take about 4 or 5 years to pay for the stadium. He paid for it in less than 2 years. He got some good ball players that were released from the Bigs and packing them in, won three pennants in a row, had a great manager by the name of Jack Lillevelt. Yeah, I forgot to mention Jack. He was one of the finest managers, too, I thought.
Of course, you're talking about old Six Stadium here in Seattle.
Six Stadium, yeah. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, standing room, only crowds out there.
And that was where the Pilots played the first year in 1969.
The Pilots, they did all right, but they were on short money. So that's when the guy that had the dough in it, I can't think of his name, but he pulled out. He was scared. But Seattle would have made it.
We talked about hitters a little bit. Who were some of the better pitchers you've seen?
Well, I worked Bob Feller in exhibition games, and he looked great. And I traveled with Satchel Paige for 5 days.
What was that like?
Huh?
What was that like?
When he was barnstorming. Well, he had a Packard as big as this building here. And I worked with him in Seattle and Bremerton, Vancouver, Spokane, Walla Walla, Yakima. And it was great working with him. He had flower vases all over, and we'd stop someplace 3 o'clock in the morning and have a hamburger. He'd take care of all the tabs. And I remember an incident we had. We were in Walla Walla, 12 o'clock game, and we had to be in Spokane for an 8 o'clock game. So he's got this kid, some Walla Walla player. He's over the bat rack. He's grabbing one bat and then grabs another bat. And he says, Satch hollered at him. He says, grab anything. You're not going to need it. We're in a hurry. He threw three by him so fast. You see, he'd cock up his left leg so high the ball looked like it was coming out of his foot. And he could pump real good. He was a hell of a pitcher. There was a guy named Jack Knott that pitched in when the Army played the Navy. sick stadium for all the, this is for the Second World War, for all the equipment that they needed. And sick stadium was sold out, and they had about 17,000 people out there. And this Knott pitched a hell of a ball game. He got beat. He pitched a two-hitter and got beat. He's one of the better pitchers I saw. And then when he went in the service, he got injured. Yeah, that was the end of his career. Red Adams was a good pitcher, pitched for Portland. And he was a pitching coach for the Dodgers for many, many years. Yeah, QP Dick Barrett was a hell of a pitcher. Freddie Hutchinson was a hell of a pitcher. Freddie Hutchinson had so much desire. He was the type of a guy that, I remember a deal down in Los Angeles. Some guy hit a home run off of him, and he followed him all the way around the bases. From now on, you're not going to get a foul ball off of me. And don't you forget it. And he was really mad. And he was the type of a guy that... when he managed and he lost a tough ball game, he'd get sick. He'd walk all the way. He lived in Rainier Beach in Seattle, you know, and he'd walk all the way from Six Stadium out to his house in Rainier Beach, which would be about 5 miles. Wouldn't talk to anybody. Really, really high-strung kid, but a hell of a kid. He had desire that you couldn't buy. He was. He'd hold up a ball game. He had to go take a drink of water. If he thought an umpire booted one, he'd really let you know. Somebody asked Barley, that umpired in the bigs for 30 years, who was the toughest manager he ever had in the big leagues. He said Freddie Hutchinson. And when he was managing, any time you saw him on the field, he says, you better hustle, because even if you call a play right and you're not in position or you're not hustling, he'd be on you. That's the way he was. Fred, great guy. Yeah, he paid me a nice compliment. I was working up on Pike Street at a bar called Home Plate. He's sitting there with Jeff Heath, Bill Kennedy, and Ito Vanni. He was up here getting his cobalt treatment for cancer. And he always called me Ash. That was the black umpire in the Coast League. Hey, Ash, I want you to know one thing. He said, you were the second best umpire in the Coast League. Thank you, Fred. Who was the best? He said, all the other guys were tied for first. That was Freddie Hutchinson. But he recommended me to the National League, and I was supposed to go, and I had a family problem, and I didn't go. I was supposed to go to Lansdowne, Florida at a training camp for I forget who with. Yeah, that was Fred. Great competitor.
Did you prefer working behind the plate or on the bases?
Bases were much easier. The plate's a lot of pressure. The plate, you're in charge. As soon as that first ball is pitched, you're in charge of that whole stadium. You're in charge of the players, the spectators, the owners. That's your baby, and you better be able to handle it, otherwise you're gone. And you've got over 300 decisions to make in about 2 hours. Well, that's a lot of work, and that's pressure. You know, one pitch can decide a pennant, which it has.
You decided a pennant once.
I decided a pennant in the Western International League. I forfeited a ball game in Spokane against Spokane. They were leading the league by half a game, and their season was about 8 days to go. Ben Garrity, the manager, was a Dodger farm, and most of those guys thought they were, they all thought they were Leo DeRocher, I guess. Garrity got out of line, and one of his ball players, George Smees, he wanted to kill my partner, a guy by the name of Bill Abbey. And I said, get that bum off the field, otherwise I'll forfeit this ball game. He says, you don't have enough guts to forfeit this ball game, because if you do, you're going to get killed. Well, he said the wrong thing. And you got to give him a couple of minutes to kind of cool off a little bit. Pretty soon here comes the cushions and here comes the chairs from the grandstand. And I finally told my partner, Abby, I says, hey, Bill, we got to forfeit this now. And I says, I want you to go for the dressing room. Go through that tunnel now. Don't be fooling around trying to explain anything to anybody. So I waved at the press box. The game was over. That's where the score tied in the ninth inning. Bases loaded. And... they were leading the league by half a game, 8 days to go. They never did catch up on that half a game. They lost that game, and they, They lost the pennant by half a game. Took the war news right off the front page. Yeah, we couldn't even eat in town. We had to eat. I called the owner of the ball club, and the park was sold out every night during that series, you know. And so I called the owner of the ball club. I said, "Jesus, they won't serve us in the restaurants. Our pictures were in the paper and headlines, That town was a hungry town. They were all eating raw meat, I guess." So Sam Collins, the owner, he said, "Geez, you're the greatest attraction we ever had. I'm finally going to make some money or else break even anyway. Otherwise, I had a losing season." So he sent a prowler car out, and we went halfway to Idaho to eat in a drive-in, and one of the bulls in the prowler car is popping off. Another time we were sitting in the lobby reading the paper of the Desert Hotel, and some guy throws a brick through the big plate glass window, and the guy, the owner of the hotel, is trying to get me to pay for the window. I'm minding my own business, paid my rent, everything. He said, "If you hadn't been sitting there," he says, "I wouldn't have lost that window." I said, "Well, where do you want me to sit?" I said, "I paid my rent." Yeah, that was quite a, those were the hungry days for athletes.
What about on-the-field fights? Any that come to mind?
Yeah, I remember over in Yakima in the Western International League, a guy by the name of Peterson, Bud Peterson, and Leo Rigetti. His kid is a pitcher for the...
Dave Rigetti,
yeah. Well, his brother Leo was an infielder, played with Seattle, started in the Western International League. They're arguing a little bit.
His father.
His father, yeah, Dave's father. And they're arguing. I said, "Well, what the hell?" I let them argue a little bit. I said, "Well, now you guys, you want to play ball, if you want to fight, go ahead and fight. But if not, let's go." So Rigetti takes a punch at Peterson, and Peterson gets a broken nose. Rigetti gets a broken hand. I get fined. I have to send in a report. I get fined $25. $25 was a lot of money in those days. Yeah, and they were out for the season, both of them. Leo Rigetti, by the way, was a hell of a fielding outfielder. Infielder. He played shortstop for Seattle. When O'Doul managed the ball club, they brought a guy down from Montreal for seasoning. They figured he needed another infielder. And the guy was supposed to be playing every day, but he always had a problem. He had a headache one day, and he had a hangnail the next day, and a backache the next day. I asked O'Doul one day when we were in the tunnel waiting to go out on the field and get ready for a ball game, and I said, "I thought you were supposed to play this kid over there." He said, "Yeah." He says, "Every day he's got a different ailment." You know who that kid was? It was Maury Wills. So he had to keep playing Rigetti. Yeah, but Maury, after he learned how to behave himself and how to hit and butt a little bit, he became quite a ball player.
When you were umpiring behind the plate, were there certain catchers that were easier or better for you to work with?
Yeah, oh yeah. They had a guy by the name of, Dick Aylward. He got down real, real good for you. Everything was terrific, and you had... Haywood Sullivan, that owns the Red Sox. Easy to work with. Big guy, 6'6". I remember down in San Francisco, season just opening, and Portland was in Frisco. That's the week Bill Sweeney died. Bill Sweeney managed in Portland. Mel Ott? No, Joe Gordon had Frisco. Haywood Sullivan coaching for Frisco. Pants Rowland was the league president. Well, they don't pay you. In those days, they didn't pay you in training camp. So I didn't want to lose that money, so I wanted to keep working. And I called Mr. Rowland. He told me where I had to go to training camp in Arizona. And I said, "Mr. Rowland, I have baseball clinics in Seattle. I'm lying like hell, you know." And I said, "I'm working a lot of baseball." And I said, "For the good of baseball," I said, "couldn't you leave me in Seattle?" I said, "I got all these clinics and exhibition games." And he said, "Will you be in shape?" "Yeah, I'll be in good shape." So, three days before the season opened, we're opening up in Frisco, I get in a fight with a sailor, and I come up with three broken ribs. I finally dumped the sailor. He was a tough drunk. And So now we go to Frisco, and Sullivan is catching, and I says, Sully, a big tall guy, you know. And I says, Sully, you got to get down for me. I got some bad ribs. He says, oh, no, you're supposed to be in perfect shape. I said, well,